Welcome to Creative Disturbance.
Rencontre avec.
Rencontre avec.
Meeting.
Meeting.
Jared S.
Let's start by a short presentation of Martin O'Brien, 3-hour performance, Taste of Flesh by Me, I'm Yours, that has been curated by Jared S. for Arts Catalyst. So a rectangular, transparent plastic tent had been erected in the venue. The artist, who was half naked and confined in a straight jacket, was attached to a chain wrapped around the central pole. His head was covered with a green swimming cap, and for an hour, on his knees, he dipped his head into a bowl of green paint, slowly unrolling the chain and painting the floor. Surrounding him, that is, in the same space, was the audience, who began moving to avoid the paint, the man, and the chain. Different sequences followed this opening one, like a series of chapters that were fully script. The most emblematic one, which gives its title to the performance, is when O'Brien began to bind the audience before inviting the people to bind him back. Martin O'Brien uses physical endurance, disgust, and elements relating to his illness of cystic fibrosis in his creation. In this performance, he wanted to address the fear of contamination associated with a sick body, highlighting recent public anxiety around the risk of infection and the surge in depictions of a zombie in popular culture.
Just me. I'm an artist.
Jerry, you are the curator of Martin O'Brien performance, Test of Flesh by Me, I'm Yours, organized by Arts Catalyst in London on April the 18th, 2015, mm-hmm. as part of a Trust Me, I'm an Artist project. And this Trust Me, I'm an Artist project deals with issues of biomedicine, ethics, and art. So first of all, could you tell us a little bit what is your interest and what is your research in such enduring performances, but in this case also are dealing with illness?
One of the things that is quite central to my research is sort of exploring how different artists are using pain in their work, whether the pain is a result of something that is self-inflicted, or on the other hand, pain that comes out of enduring hardship through the performance, which is sort of bound to the time or the kind of actions happening within the performance. And I suppose like those sort of conversations around pain that comes through doing the work and pain that is self-inflicted is also, is almost like a doubling of responsibility between the artist and the audience, and what people feel is acceptable levels of pain within this sort of staged environment of performance. So I'm quite interested in how, you know, even though we're all aware that the situation is real but staged, it still affects us in quite visceral ways in terms of what we're seeing, in terms of perhaps some of those action triggering memories or inflecting on the person watching in a sort of affective and empathic way, really. And on the other side of it, maybe on a more sort of scientific side of it, is I'm quite interested in the sort of research coming out of pain neuroscience that is measuring different levels of pain in terms of, you know, there's a sort of, it's almost like some neuroscientists are speculating about different pain thresholds and how different people are more susceptible to, I suppose, enduring pain, whilst others are responding to it from just looking at it or identify with certain pains. So you can think of sort of ex-dancers watching a sort of grueling choreography and responding to that, or the sort of neurological interpretation of that is something of familiarity. So yeah, broadly speaking, I'm interested in what kinds of pain enter into performance, how that's witnessed by an audience, and then this question of what is the sort of acceptable level of pain within this context?
Because this project, Trust Me, I'm an Artist, is about biomedicine, ethics, and art. And do you consider that this limit between what is acceptable and what is not is an ethical limit or a legal limit? How do you put the boundaries between a legal limit and an ethical limit?
I mean, I think there's an ethical consideration within it. And I think that comes from possibly a sense of, it maybe comes back to this question of, is the kind of pain being used in this context, is it necessary, I suppose, for sort of transmitting the work from an audience perspective? Does he have to go through this to really deliver the work? I suppose that's something that has an ethical consideration to it, actually. Do you have to sort of, and then because it's bound to time, maybe an hour is sufficient, maybe five, you know, because the longer a durational performance goes on, then it's sort of, it's like, okay, well, that was done for an hour, maybe that was enough to communicate the message. When you take it to sort of 3, 4, 5 hours, and it's really pushing the person's bodily limits of what they can do, actually, I think that's probably where this ethical question comes into, and who sets that, and who decides on that, and whose responsibility is it to sort of stop things when they get too much, or sort of define how long something should be.
Did you have any role or in the choice, in the way the performance we saw yesterday was scripted?
I had a vague idea of when everything was going to happen in terms of the different actions he was carrying out. In terms of sort of creating the atmosphere in the room, that was more Martin's idea, and we had conversations about how it would work and what we sort of thought would be the issues with it, and I questioned him about certain things, but didn't want to restrict him in terms of what he wanted to carry out. But I mean, I was probably more the health and safety caution.
Can you explain why the test of flesh by me and yours is different in Martin's usual performance?
Okay. I mean, generally, Martin is he's not an artist who works with an audience. He performs his work and audiences witness it as a sort of secondary beings in the space. But recently, he's been thinking more about sort of putting his body within the work and people actually engaging with it. So he did a recent performance in Birmingham about a month ago where audience members were actually invited to just bite in him as he lay on a sort of medical bed table. Specifically for this performance, he was very interested in disrupting this idea of the performer being on stage and the audience watching passively. He really wanted to challenge that. So, and the idea of the artist being restricted. So as we saw people who were present, he was chained to a pole in the center of the room and was carrying out a series of actions around the space and moving the people continually around the space. You were never comfortable. You were never sort of fixed. And that in itself sort of, there was very interesting moments where you would watch people wanting to intervene and them not wanting to interrupt what he was doing, which is generally he would just carry out what he was doing without any sort of interference or engage in interruption. The possibility of that was never laid bare for the audience to deal with. I think for him it's almost a sort of, I think he's thinking more about how his work affects people and how people engage with it, but actively in that moment as things are happening and making those decisions. You could say they were ethical decisions, actually, if you sort of passively watch something and let things happen when they could be a potentially dangerous situation, I suppose.
So because it was more of participatory performance, there is more ethical issues engaged as when the audience is just passive and watching?
I mean, this is from my perspective. I think there was a very interesting, in terms of sort of group dynamics and group behavior, I think if you're watching something abjectly, you might make a decision to leave quicker than when you're all in the same shared space, experiencing something collectively that was sort of moving you and engaging you around this space. I think a lot of people sort of, there was more sort of almost a communal experience of that performance in terms of the way it was staged, which I think affected the way people, the time people spent in the space. I mean, as we know, the performance sort of started off with a more sort of somber, quite down, sort of ever downtrodden experience, and where he was sort of carrying out actions by himself and not really paying so much attention to the people around him. But as the performance progressed, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of interaction. He started talking a little bit. He was whispering with people, and it was almost like other people wanted to maybe experience that. And other people were just sort of, you know, there was a sense of, well, what's he going to do next? And we can't possibly leave unless something else happened. Or what's the worst he could do? If you're thinking of it on a sort of, on the other scale of that, it was almost like, I don't really want to look, but I can't leave because I don't want to miss out on something happening. I think there was a sense of that as well. But I mean, yeah, that happens in a, it's all about group dynamics. And I think that performance really played around group dynamics quite interestingly, actually.
So he starts biting people. And then there is a graduation within the performance when the audience can start biting him. So what is your take on this?
When we spoke about that sequence happening, I mean, I asked Martin, I asked him, what if no one, you know, wants you to bite? I mean, I would probably physically stop you if you tried to bite me. And what if no one wants to, you know, take up your offer of giving them the right to bite your body? And for him, that would just be the end. That would have just been the end of the action. I was quite surprised how many people took to it. Actually, I didn't think it would become this humorous. I nominate you, and you nominate me, and you know, all of that sort of. It was almost like a, as you say, you know, you were passing this right over, and then the performance shifted into this sort of more, I think people felt they had the right then to laugh and engage with each other, whereas previously, you know, there was much more of a sort of standing back really from it.
And as a curator, during the discussion we had afterwards, you had this the statement that you didn't want to be beaten and you didn't want to bite him.
Yeah.
But then you actually yet let yourself be beaten and you bite him because you were the curator and you felt a kind of responsibility to engage.
Yes.
So someone like you to develop that part, because why being a curator here? Why do you split yourself as a person and yourself as a curator? Mm-hmm. And why do you put under the carpet your own feelings or, you know, beliefs or whatever? Or
there's a few references to sort of curators in performance art being bitten by artists, actually. And that was specifically, I didn't really want to recreate this sort of performance art history moment. That was probably why I didn't want to be bitten. Obviously, I know Martin quite well. I've got to know him really well over the last year and a half, so I don't have any of those sort of inhibitions, actually, about being bitten, apart from the fact that it would probably be quite painful and not very pleasant. But I didn't really have this sort of distance, I suppose, and because I also knew a lot about what was going to happen, I didn't really feel that I needed to be part of that to prove anything. But then, I mean, obviously I'm in a space with some people who know me, some people who don't know me, and me sort of running away every single time he came round, just, you know, then, you know, it just becomes this sort of cat and mouse. I didn't really want to like interrupt or be sort of too present within the performance. I was trying to judge that distance within the performance. So at one point, actually, I just didn't actually want to move. And I just thought, well, he'll just do whatever he wants and just carry on. And then the flow of the performance continues. So I was, these were some of the things I was thinking about. It seemed like he controlled the audience a little bit after a while. And there were more, I suppose, the longer you spent in the room, having seen the beginnings and the hardship, then it was almost like in the last hours, you were under a spell and you were almost guided by him into what to do. And certainly points where, so in the part of the performance where he was sticking the cotton wool, which is a very metaphorical, wrapped in cotton wool, this body. And then he got someone to help him. So I think there was little moments where, because of that one-to-one engagement, or he's whispering quite tenderly to people, there was a certain sensitivity that came into it, I suppose, that maybe made the biting more playful when that came about, and then people felt they could laugh, even though the laughter initially maybe might have been a nervous laughter, because I think generally a lot of people probably weren't expecting him to bite that hard, and it was sort of like, okay, I'm not going to look like I'm in anguish, I'm just going to laugh, and it's fine, it's okay, I'm alive. So it was almost like a reassurance gesture in a sense. But I certainly didn't expect that sequence to be playful at all, actually. So the tone in the way the delivery and the actual action happened was the complete opposite of what I thought it would be. I thought the whole tone of the performance was going to be quite serious.
But what is your analysis after the performance of what happened compared to what you were expecting?
I mean, a lot of what happened was sort of what I imagined would happen. I think the response and the way he sort of engaged with the audience and the space was very different to what I thought would happen. I thought more people would probably stand back and leave. I thought a lot of people stayed for a lot longer than I expected them to stay within the performance space. But also, I mean, I haven't seen Martin perform. This is the first time I've seen him perform. So for me, I was also negotiating seeing the work happen live, even though I'd heard about it and I knew roughly what would happen. There were surprises. Which was interesting, because then it makes me think about questions around how much information to give an audience about a performance and how much you should sort of just let happen and develop as the work is being performed.
And you think you would like to provide more or less information?
Probably a bit more.
Why?
Obviously people choose to come to things, but I think in the context of where the work was coming from, I think maybe there's more there that actually needs to be said, instead of sort of keeping a very general, assuming people might look at the artist's website or read a bit more. I think there could have been more information about the context of the work, so perhaps that it wasn't just seen as just a durational performance, because I think there's wider issues, especially around the sort of medical bodies context, which I'm very much interested in, actually, and just about body ownership, really. Who owns the body? What can you do with your body? What is acceptable? What is acceptable in different contexts when you remove this body out of a medically, culturally defined context and bring it into space like performance art, for performance art? So these are the kinds of things that I would certainly put into more of a context about the work, actually, which I think generally people really need to be thinking about, especially in terms of how everything is going to affect our bodies in future. Basically, I think there's more of a sort of discourse around that needed to be within this context, actually.
And do you think this is where your responsibility as curator lies, or is it something to be shared with the artist?
I think it's something to be shared with the artist. But then there is a curatorial responsibility to lay out context, actually, in detail. It just depends on, I mean, we spoke about how much and how little, and it's also about respecting what the artist wants to present. So maybe all of this comes afterwards, actually, because sometimes a lot of artists want to work in a certain framework and then want things disseminated afterwards, whilst some want it the other way around. So it's a negotiation that,
And how do you feel you've then the balance between your responsibility toward the artist compared to your responsibility toward the audience as a curator?
That's a tricky one. It's a very tricky one because, I mean, I certainly don't want to control how people think and what they think about, or create a situation where everything is sort of laid out for someone to not discover or think about. I think certainly working on this project and with Martis, if you want to judge it in terms of success, I think if people left with a sort of confusion about thinking and perception, I think it's successful in that right, and want to find out more and query and question. I think things should end with a question as opposed to an answer, if that makes any sense. If there's a set of questions raised through the kind of work, then I find that valid work anyway.
Des pastilles, ear, à sucer pour l'oreille, candy.